you can tell everybody.
Recording in progress.
Everybody, go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the known universe listening to this live on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chabon and Dr. Keelan Hinton. Well, we are here for all of your mental health, family, love, relationship, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H, psych@gmail.com. As we always say, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, family issues, attachment issues, community issues, and everything else in between. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, perspectives, ideas, interventions, or anything you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University, are not supported by WMUL, are not supported by any of their sponsors or affiliates or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives of Dr. Chapman and myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton. So as we always say, take this advice at your own risk. And while some of this may be therapeutic, Dr. Chapman loves to remind us what, sir?
It's not therapy, folks. We do hope that you get with a mental health provider should you need to. And, you know, sometimes we'll talk about some stuff where you might feel like that's the thing for you to do. We do advise you to do that, but we want you to know, you know, we love you, we're here for you, but we are on the radio right now. We're just having conversations. We do happen to be psychologists. This is not therapy.
Good deal, good deal. So now we've got all the official stuff out of the way. We always start out with just a mental health check-in to see how everybody's going, and then we'll rock and roll with today's topic. And today's topic is going to be a heavy one and a touchy one, which may or may not expand above and beyond today. Today we're going to start a conversation on trauma, okay? The complexities of trauma, defining trauma, what it is, how does trauma manifest in our lives, how does it in some way, shape, form, or fashion impede us from being the best version of ourselves that we can be, and then hopefully, ultimately, Dr. Chapman and myself, hopefully, will give you some good advice on how do we start the road to healing and moving forward in our lives. So, again, all of that one sort of ideas and an outlook of where we will go, we may go in this conversation. But first and foremost, Doc, as again, this show is coast to coast. I am in the great state of West Virginia. Dr. Chapman is in sunny, sunny Southern California. We've gone coast to coast, so as we always like to do a mental health check-in to see how everybody's doing. How are you, sir? How is Southern California treating you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Can't complain.
You can't complain? I'm sure you can't. You live in Southern California. There'd be something wrong if you be complaining now. But you know what? I can't complain either. You know why? Because I live in the greatest state in America.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Which is West Virginia, and I don't say that facetiously. I mean that.
West Virginia is a great state.
Yes,
I'm not saying it's greater than California, but you know, it's a good state.
Oh man! So again, let's rock and roll. We thought that we get a little more clinicky. Is that a word? It'll be a word today. We'll get a little bit more technical and a little bit more clinical with the topics and discussions we'll have. And one of the things that had been on both of our minds, because we talk a lot about attachment, a lot about relationships, we talk a lot about behavior, but a lot of times at the core of behavior and things that people do, we haven't really touched on trauma. What is trauma? Just what is trauma and how it sort of manifests itself in people's lives from day to day, as well as the duration of their lives when we have events that happen to us that go unchecked, that go unaddressed. Can that be a problem? So we thought we'd start off with, first and foremost, just starting with the definition of trauma. And what are some of the myths that people think about trauma and healing from trauma? So a good place to start is, what is trauma? What's not trauma? What separates trauma? Or Dr. Chapman, maybe I'll throw this out here. What separates a traumatic experience from just a normal experience or something bad happening to you? What do you think?
Well, I would say anything bad that happens to you could be trauma. But what separates it, I guess, from a normal experience is how you respond to it, and usually psychologically and physiologically. And I mean, trauma is so complex. You know, I think there's even one version where people call it, you know, complex, either a version of, you know, PTSD or these different things. Nuanced and like a glove that fits individually on a person. So there can be two people that experience, you know, the quote unquote bad incident or the incident that should produce some type of traumatic response. And they both might have a traumatic response, but one might only have one, has it later, and it's been trauma for both. But the symptoms of it and how that's gonna carry out and how that's gonna look lifelong is gonna depend on the person. So if I was gonna separate the two, I mean, first you just have to start recognizing that normal is, I don't wanna say that there's not a normal. I think we both as scientists can see there's some degree of normal, but as social scientists, we know that that degree of normal ebbs and flows based on person or people.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess to take that a step further, when we talk about normal, there are these, I think that what we both may mean is, like, as cultures and communities, there are these shared, there are certain things that to some degree we share and experience. In general, we kind of share them the same to some degree, okay? How we define normal. And then there's individuality in experiences as well. I think that this is a hard conversation to have. One of the things that I've seen in the classroom, as well as now that I'm newly to practicing, we've discussed this before, is how the average person defines trauma, how the everyday average person defines trauma on the street. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that if the event isn't dramatic, somebody hasn't died, if someone hasn't died or they haven't been physically abused or they haven't been, God forbid, sexually abused in some way, people feel like they haven't been traumatized, that they really don't have traumatic events to talk about in sessions. And that's interesting. Like, I define trauma as anything that can happen to you that can leave some sort of emotional imprint of some sort that sticks with you and to some degree can potentially affect how you function on a day-to-day basis. And typically how we define, I hate the word abnormality, but I think typically how we define abnormality is, it's not necessarily that you have a problem. The question is, whatever it is, does it affect your day-to-day life?
Right.
Does it affect how you function in some way, shape, form, or fashion? Your ability to function on, take care of your kids, to go to work, to sleep, to eat, like, you know, that's when we start to call something a problem, I think, in the world of psychology.
Right. And I think that's, it's interesting going back to what your students say and even clients, and going back to that definition, I think a lot of us think, oh, whether it's trauma or just mental illness in general, that the way this has to look is that you got to be abnormal. And then even the way that we describe that in our field is like, you know, the 3 D's. So there's, you got to deviate either through your symptoms or statistically from the normal population. You have to have a level of distress, either psychological or physical. And then you have to be having a level of dysfunction. And that's one thing for abnormality, but just thinking about your version, which I like about, does it have the ability to have an impact or imprint on how you respond later on in life? Well, first of all, people, either for themselves when you're asking this question, or just, I'm thinking about the context of students who really might minimize somebody else's trauma, because they'll be like, oh, that's trauma. You know, like they won't see it as real trauma, because to them, they see this person as functioning normally. Yeah. So they're going to work, they're getting things done. I mean, even if you had one, they might base it on whatever the incident was. And even if they don't base it on the incident, they just base it on your behaviors. And if your behavior seems to be normal, then you couldn't have been traumatized.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a big one as well, is other people's perceptions of the event. You mad at that?
Right.
How many times have we all heard that to some degree or another? You still mad? You mad at that? You upset at that? Everybody go through breakups. Everybody get bullied. Get over it. Bullying happens to everybody. Breakups happen to everybody. Because things are commonplace or seem to be commonplace. It's almost like a lot of times people, the world makes us feel like, and communities and people around us make us feel like we don't have the right to be upset. So a part of what we do is we lie to ourselves.
Yeah.
We push it down deep.
Right. The key there you said is in communities. You know, I was reading something, I think it was on Facebook, and it was a teacher who's teaching at, I don't know, one of those Ivy business schools. I can't remember which one it was. But basically, she asked her students what they thought the average income was for everyday people, and they said $100,000. And then when they were asking somebody else, I think it was like a more like a social psychologist, they were saying like, well, if you ask people in poverty, they might say that too, something similar like that, it's lower. And it's because it's based on the community. So in your community, if you're having a conversation about things, right? Okay. Communities, be aware, we're about to talk, we get into some things that are controversial. But someone talking about how they used to get beat when they were younger, and another person says, hey man, we all used to get that. I mean, I don't understand why you talk like that's a big deal. Well, first of all, it actually happened to me and I'm a better person for it. Yeah. So based on the context of the community, it is really shaping, one, if this person has been traumatized, how they're allowed to deal with it. And then two, how the whole community looks at it. Not that everything's a whole, but you know, there are norms that are established within the community.
Yeah, yeah. So I wonder how many of us, and how many people listening, or how many people may hear about this. It's something to think about, and it's a good starting point. Were there things that bothered you, or that left some sort of emotional stain or some sort of emotional scar, and you felt like you didn't have the right to be upset? It's weird how I've had a few clients that have had things happen to them. And that's one of the first things that I tell them, and they don't. It's one client in particular, after I told her this, she told me she didn't need me anymore. We had 2 sessions. And what I told her was, you have the right to your own feelings and you have the right to be upset. And she starts to cry. And it's like, I've always been made to feel like that the things that bother me shouldn't bother me, and that I should have let them go a long time ago. And it's the first time anybody's ever told me that I had the right to my feelings and I had the right to be upset, and that my pain is mine and I have the right to process it and go through it as long as I wanted to. And like the next time, she was like, for whatever reason, that was freeing for her, because she felt like she didn't have a right to her own pain. She felt like she didn't have, and this situation was, it was a traumatic experience for her. But when everything and everybody around you is telling you that it shouldn't be, it can, she, like, for years, like 30 years, just lived a confused life, would go through all of this anxiety, all of this depression, all of these stomach issues, and all this anxiety and depression because of this issue that she needs to confront and face or deal with to some degree. She won't, because she's telling herself that she doesn't have the right to deal with it. And for 30 years, this problem is manifesting in her life in so many different ways that she never dealt with until we met, because everybody around her was telling her, that shouldn't bother you. That's not a big deal. Like you said, we all get spanked that way. We all get done that way. We all get yelled at. What he really meant was this. What she really meant was that. Are you still talking about this? So I wonder how many of us don't deal and don't deal with issues because we feel like we can't or we shouldn't.
Well, and I think in that example, that's interesting because I think it gives a depiction of what happens for some people when it comes to trauma in general. Like, when a person is not allowed to process it because of the community, I mean, trauma is already hard to process anyways. Generally, things happen to us on an everyday basis, and if it's a routine thing, we can go ahead and integrate that memory and go on with our life. But if it's a trauma, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit our normal schema. It doesn't fit our normal expectations, particularly if it's like an egregious trauma. And then we already have difficulty integrating, but we really have difficulty integrating if we and someone is telling us or encouraging us to ignore it, to dismissing it, belittling it, then we're stuck with, that doesn't take away all the unresolved feelings. And then where do they go? So from a mental health perspective, if you're not gonna put it outwards, then it's probably gonna go inwards. And so that could look a lot of different ways. That could look like the person who is, it sounds dramatic when I say it, but let me try to make it less dramatic, self-destructive. Now, yeah. And that, and I don't necessarily mean like somebody you're visiting is very extreme self-destructive. I mean in some ways they might just be depressed. Not to have those two confused, but depressed and for this definition is basically outward anger going inside. So I am destructing myself, and that depression, that anger that I have outside, I'm putting it inside, and that's the destructive part. Because I have no other place that's safe for me to put it. And yeah. That's where I put it. And then in more extreme cases, you might see some behaviors related to it that are external.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Hopefully that's where we move is, what happens when we have, and again, so for those that are listening, and again, station identification, this is WMUL 88.1 FM, Marshall University. Again, this is every Wednesday at 9. You have Dr. Nate Chapman. You have Dr. Keelan Hinton. This is Brother talking about, and we're starting a conversation and a series on trauma, just trying to define trauma, trying to figure out what it is. Today we might talk a little bit about some of the myths of trauma, which we've just started on, some of the myths of trauma, and how does trauma or unresolved painful issues that happen to us in our lives, how do these things manifest themselves in our lives if they go undealt with? If this, what they call in Gestalt Week, they call this unfinished business. When you have this unfinished business in your life, Dr. Chapman just made a perfect statement. It doesn't just leave you. It goes somewhere. And the question is, where does that energy go?
Yeah. So I think that's the myth we're on right now. So the myth, and I'm sure you see it, and I see it too. And you know, there might be parts where we have this, our own self, even if it's not trauma, we just compartmentalize or put something in a little bucket and, you know, and try to act like it's not there. And I think that's the myth. People believe, and sometimes that's what gets projected on the people that have been victimized in some way, that you should just let that go. Like, you know, particularly if it's somebody who did that to you. Like, I didn't even mean it like that. Like, I'm not even thinking about that anymore. I don't know why you're still on that. Like, you should let that go. That should just be gone for you. And if it's had this type of psychological imprint, then it's not easy to just let go. But that's what the belief is. The belief is people should let it go. I think some of the commercials we're seeing now from, what is it, BetterHelp? I think they're really putting an interesting perspective on some of these things.
For me, myth number two, time will heal all wounds. Time will heal all wounds for anyone who may be listening or hear this is, at least to me, in a lot of instances, one of the biggest lies you will ever hear. If you, again, and this just goes along with the theme that we're talking about, that if you do not handle or face or address issues that have caused a major emotional or mental disruption in some way for you, that energy will manifest itself in some way, shape, form, or fashion. For a lot of people, it does. And for some people, it's subtle ways that we make adjustments and we move on and we move forward. And for other people, those byproducts may be larger and truly and really disrupt their lives. But I think that that's important to, you know, I think that facing our past is not an easy thing. I think that that's a common theme that Dr. Chapman works with a lot of couples. How many times have you heard couples say, let's just drop it, let's just forget it and move on? And next week, 2 weeks from now, a month from now, they're arguing about the same things. Because let's just let it go, let's just drop it, let's just move on, never ever works. When you leave business unfinished, it's going to manifest. So now the question is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, definitely true with couples. I mean, yep. I'd rather they say, let's drop it or just stop talking about it or whatever. And or even say, no, I'm actually done with it. No, I'm done with it. Like, I'm good. And then it just weaves its way back into the next argument. It wasn't completely done. But I think there are a lot of people struggle with that in general. But I think this idea of that, what you said about time, time can only heal all wounds if you use time to give care to the wound.
Yeah.
So the analogy would be like, it is true that your body is self-healing. So the analogy might not work perfectly, but this is how it would go. Let's say you break your arm. So if you break your arm and you don't do anything about it, eventually your body would heal in some way. But that part of your arm that's broken, like, I know my dad, like, he broke his finger when he was younger and it has like a little bend in it. It corrected, but it didn't correct the way it was before that. It just stays like that now. So that's how it would fix. It's going to settle in a new way. Now, I'm not saying that to say, because, you know, working on trauma is hard, that when you start working through the process, that I don't even think it would be fair to say that your arm is going to go back to the way it was before. But it can be different than the way it's going to be if you just leave it and don't do anything with it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point. That's a myth number three. If we could be who we was, if I could be who I was before X happened to me, everything would be fine.
Oh, yeah.
The biggest mistake that couples make and the biggest mistake that people make. And when I deal with a lot of trauma, we've talked about this. One of the things that I do with with clients is I got a jar that I may have shown you. I got a jar that's broken in half. And I say this is what we do as therapists, is we try to create a context that, you know, to help you put your jar back together. And when we put this jar back together, it has a crack in it. This jar will never be the same jar that it was before because it has a crack in it. Now, we can get some Gorilla Glue, some crazy glue. We can get duct tape. And I'm showing they're holding the jar. And I say we can glue this together, and it can probably be just as strong, if not stronger, as it was before. But my point is that this jar is not the same jar as it was before it was broken. And I think that sometimes, the point I'm trying to make to them is that I always tell them as therapists, we're not magicians. I may not be able to make your trauma go away. That there are some things that after this jar was broken, it has a crack in it. And there are some events that can happen in life that can completely change the DNA of who we are. And I think that sometimes one of the mistakes that people make is they try to be the couple that they was before the tragedy happened. Or they try to be the person that they was before it happened. And maybe sometimes that can happen. And I hope it does. But sometimes we have to learn how to build something new from where we are, because there are some traumatic events for some people that can change the DNA of who they are. And hopefully when we're done, this jar will be just as strong, if not stronger, than it was before. And we can look back on those cracks and we can say those cracks will become war stories. Yeah, a couple can look back at those cracks and say, yeah, that was the time that life tried to break us, and we still standing and we still here and we're stronger and we still hold water. We still do what we did just as good, if not better than before. We can look back on those cracks at some point, hopefully. It's times that life tried to break us but didn't. But I want to know, what do you think about that? I think that that is one of the myths and one of the mistakes that some people make and some couples make is when tragedy happens or something significantly bad happens, should the goal be to be who I was before it happened? Is that even possible? Are there times that that's not possible?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when it comes to metamorphosis or just change in life, whether there's a trauma or not, I think the person who doesn't feel like they've had any trauma, they look at their life now and compare it to how it was 10 years ago, they'll probably say they're a different person. Now, they might have some personality traits or some things that are consistent, but the whole trajectory of just evolving requires you to just grow and be another person. Unfortunately, I could be fortunate. Trauma forces you to do that quicker. And, you know, I've seen it with the different types of things. I mean, with couples, I usually use, because I use a Gottman method, and he has this house that's called the Sound Relationship House, and it has the principles of what makes relationship work. And when I'm going through that, usually depending on what's went wrong in the couple, or, you know, what the problem has been, if it's been something like an affair, something like where there's a lot of mistrust, then I'll say, you know, this house has crumbled. I mean, there's really usually no other way for me to say it. It's just, you know. And then I say, but if they've had a chance to buy a house, I say, you remember the last time you went to get a new house, right? And how that was like, the experience to get to, you know, go into a new one, build up your home, put all the things in it. But now you have an opportunity to do that here. Yeah, I mean, you can mourn the other house, the old relationship, and then start thinking about building it. That's real hard to do under a traumatic situation, particularly outside of couples. You know, I remember my work with amputees and people have spinal cord injuries, and we're talking about mourning, being able to use all of your limbs and having full function, and now you don't anymore. And coming to grips with that can be very hard. And then I think other things that we won't call traumatic, but people can relate to, like having a kid. You were a couple that were single, or you were a person that was single, now you have a child. Or even prior to having a pet, Even though, you know, depending on who you are, you could have a pet for less than you would have a kid. But the whole point is you have this before, you have this after, you change and you morph. And I do think that if you spend a lot of time putting a lot of energy into who you were before the trauma, that's not saying, because depending on what the trauma is, it could be a relationship you're mourning, somebody you lost. You can spend time mourning this person you lost. But when you're just spending a lot of time, let's use the example of a house. House has been destroyed and you spend a lot of time just looking at the ground the house used to be on. That's taken away from time you could be using to build.
Yeah.
So accepting that you can build a new house, I like the example of jars. I think I like to use the houses because you can build something new. And we do evolve life.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that we know, we've established that trauma doesn't always have to be something catastrophic. Anything that happens to you that leaves an emotional imprint or stain of some sort, for lack of a better term, that isn't dealt with to some degree can potentially, and that can potentially affect how you function psychologically, emotionally, physiologically. It can affect you interpersonally with people. And it's something that sticks with you over time, which may be a key component as well, that the adjustments that you make to that event stick with you. And I think that that's big. Just like when that's what I was trying to think of before, and it slipped my mind, but he's talking about breaking, when you break a finger or arm, it'll heal, but it may heal crooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times what happens is things, when we don't face, we have traumatic events that happen to us and we don't face them, a part of what we do is we develop all of these adjustments to help us deal, but we really aren't facing the event, you know? So what, like, and I think that we all, to some degree, what's the thing that we always talk about, people, when we talk about substance use? People always, I'm one of my things is I always say that people self-medicate out of pain. That it's easy to ask people why they drink or why they use substances, but a lot of times, at least from what I'm learning, being new in this game, therapy is like there seems to be some sort of pain or some sort of emotional trauma that wasn't dealt with, and this alcohol or this drug or whatever the case may be is how I adjust and cope to dealing with whatever this thing is that maybe I can't put into words. Maybe I don't know how to face. I can't put into words. I can't pinpoint what it is. I just know in certain situations I get scared. I get afraid. I feel lonely. I want to self-harm. I don't know why. I just know it comes over me. And those connections haven't been made to an original source, to ground zero, so to speak, to the original event that led to those feelings, which play an important part in why you're trying, how you're trying to deal with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you know, sometimes, you know, depending on how we approach this, sometimes an event can be so traumatic that you don't even actually recall it. You know, you repress it, you push it outside of your consciousness, as Freud would say. And going back to what you're saying and bringing in that broken arm analogy, so when you have it, even though you don't recall it, you create strategies. Now, these strategies, it would be like, okay, your arm is broken, you didn't fix it. Now you need to use that arm that's not fixed. You're gonna create some ways to compensate for the broken arm. And you're gonna be doing that for a while, right? then you're going to get used to doing that particular thing. So when you say things like people using alcohol or some type of substance, there are lots of things: alcohol, food, sex, gaming. There's lots of ways you can numb pain, work. But whatever you use, it becomes a ritual, a thing for you. And after you do it for a longer period of time, if you've never really acknowledged what ground zero is, you have years of walking around and coping with a broken arm where you have created a whole way of being by now.
Yeah.
And you might have done that longer than the trauma was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's, I'm pausing because I'm thinking about how hard that is for people to truly ask ourselves, do I really, why don't I like people? Do I really drink because it's fun? Or am I trying to drown out something deeper? Do I not hang out? Am I really a loner? Do people really like all of these different adjustments and things that we make, all these different adjustments that we make to life? And how much is it? How much of it stems from some source that we've tucked in the back of our mind, or we just aren't taught? Again, we aren't taught that those things shouldn't matter to us, because everybody gets spanked, everybody gets beat, everybody gets touched. It happens to everybody. You know, so it's interesting to talk about how these things manifest and how we try to deal with them, you know. And a part of what we don't realize, I think a part of what I was just telling somebody the other day, that I had a client that wanted medication. If I could just get medication, everything will be fine. And I was trying to explain to this person that sessions, this is where you get fine. That a part of what medication does, while it helps, you know, I had to remind them, I said that wounds heal from the inside out, not from the outside in. And that a part of what happens is, while medication can help, we want to get to the root source. Just like wounds heal from the outside, from the inside out, you know, you have to heal from the inside out. That the work that has to be done to truly get over whatever the situation is internal work. Just like if you cut yourself and you put a Band-Aid on it, the Band-Aid may stop the bleeding for today or tomorrow for a while. And you can keep changing. Your Band-Aid is alcohol. Maybe your Band-Aid is meth. Maybe your Band-Aid, like you said, is sex. You can continue to change Band-Aids over and over. When one doesn't work and one gets soiled to a point that it doesn't work anymore, you go to another one. This is how you went from alcohol to weed, and from weed to meth, and from meth to heroin, because that Band-Aid got soiled to a point that it didn't work anymore. You went to another one, and you can't figure out why none of this works. And it's because, just like wounds heal from the inside, you have to do, there's internal work that needs to be done. And I think that that's the hard part. But a lot of times, again, sometimes people just, I get it. You know, I thank God that, you know, I don't have a substance use issue. I'm not saying I don't have other issues, but I don't have a substance use issue. But I definitely have other issues, obviously. But sometimes people just need to breathe. And I get that. You know what I mean? That's not me justifying sex or gaming or eating or over exercising or isolation or anything. I understand what people are trying to do. I think that sometimes when people are in emotional pain, I just need to breathe, even if it's for 5 minutes. I'm tired of my mind racing. I'm tired of my mind running. I just need to. And even though this high may last 5 minutes or 5 hours, and I know it's going to come back later, at least I got some relief for now. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's easy. nobody has time to go through. Well, people do. They feel like, I think a lot of times in the moment, people feel like that could take months and months for me to go through therapy and get through this. Like, ain't nobody got $100 an hour, and then I got to go every week for 12 weeks, and who has time for that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's valid, though. I mean, we know that the health care system has its complications. You know, even though there's copays, depending on what type of insurance you have, there are the other complications. You know, I've seen it where some clients have, for whatever reason, they have a high, what is it called? Like when you have to do for insurance, where you put, not the copay that you put, like that you have to meet a deductible.
Yeah.
And sometimes those deductibles are high. And I don't think the general public, I was really surprised to see that. Like, it would be like, oh, this person to see you has to have, they have to hit an 800 deductible before the insurance will kick in.
Dollars are $800, yeah.
And that is like 8 sessions. And so people are like, nah, I'm good, deuces. And then I think the other thing about it, particularly for someone who's had some type of trauma, is trying to figure out if they even go through the process, because sometimes people just go with whoever the insurance says they should go with. But if they don't, you know, they're like, okay, who should I pick? You know, like, I mean, that might be a good show for us to actually do one day, is to think about how to actually select a mental health provider, what to be aware of, and all those things. So I think we take it for granted that the system is not easy to, I'm not saying it's a system, totally a system problem. I'm just saying it's not so easy to navigate. And that usually people that have better resources are the ones that are like, yeah, I've been therapy, like, which is good, but they do therapy like it's, you know, going to yoga or going to the gym, like it's all the time they're doing it. But that's not, everybody doesn't have those same resources or understanding.
Agreed. I agree. It's not cheap. Definitely. But then, you know, when I'm talking to somebody that does meth, and I'm like, bro, how much do you spend a day and a week on meth? Or somebody who, you know, I had a client that buys alcohol every day. You know what I mean? He spends $15 a day.
Yeah.
On his beer or whatever. And I'm like, let's add this up, you know? But again, I know, again, everybody, I think a larger part of it is, this is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
What can you give me now?
Right.
And that's why usually, initially, I don't, and I could be wrong, like I said, I'm new to all this, but I don't mess around. Like, the first session, I always make sure they leave with some understanding of something. One, to hook them. But two, if they're dealing with anxiety, depression, I always do a lot of DBT stuff. This dialectic behavioral therapy stuff, you know. And try to teach them, trying to give them a Band-Aid. Something you can do or you can try until the next time I see you. Because people are like, I'm here. I need something now. I don't have time for this. Get to know me. You want to sit and talk for the first hour, then the second hour, this, which is next week, you want to do something else, and then finally the third session, you starting to dig into, man, I'm gone. I need something now. I've been talking to you 3 weeks, and you haven't given me anything. Give me something. You know, anything. Just give me something to go home and try, you know? And to me, I found that at least the populations that I deal with, like, that's important to people. Because they're like I said, some of them have substance issues. If I could give them anything to substitute their way, they don't care. Because they know that I'm doing this just to get through the day. You give me something to get through the day, or at least something to try to get through the day. You know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when people have, depending on what's going on with people, and it doesn't always have to fit under the label of trauma, but they want to cope better. I think genuinely people want to live, you know, life, and things get in the way of it. And, you know, trauma is one of the things that get in the way of it. And they're trying to find resources to get back to them. You know, I believe that even with clients that are kind of required to go because of the court, I think we all have this desire down somewhere to get to our next level, to be a better version of ourselves. It's just, you know, stuff happens in life, and it impacts us psychologically and physically and changes our trajectory, which is kind of like the premise of what we're talking about. What are those things that change the trajectory in life? And I'm sure every clinician that's out there, if we could just give somebody, not that we want people addicted to drugs, but I know if I could give a magic pill for every person, couple, whoever, or just even friends that come to me that are having a problem that I knew would resolve it, I would give it to them. Yeah, I mean, nobody wants to see anybody suffering. But just like things take, it's not just the trauma could be instant, but the results of it could be, could have had an impact much longer than the moment or whatever period of time it had if it's not chronic trauma. And now essentially we're talking about behaviors, we're talking about habits, we're talking about unconscious connections, and we're talking about them over a period of time. Another way for people to think about it is, if we told you to stop eating cheese bread, okay, maybe that's just my problem, or whatever food you're eating, it might not be an instant change for you, because there's things you've been doing for a period of time that's not gonna be instant for you to break. And even if you do break them, you're probably gonna go back and revert to your habits. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's habits involved also.
Yeah. I'm thoroughly convinced that to some degree, a part of healing is relapse. Especially if you've developed some habit, you've developed some habit to adjust or protect yourself in some way. Because ultimately, that has become the crux and theme of everything for me. Doing. I'm always telling myself, and I'm always telling them, I truly believe that we are all always trying to protect ourselves in yeah. some way, shape, form, or fashion. If it's isolation, if it's agoraphobia, if it's anxiety, if it's anger, the person who is, you know, I had somebody talking about somebody who was stingy. They won't share anything. I'm like, who took from you so much and so often that you felt like you couldn't share? Even the people in person that you think is mean, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a great point for people to understand. Even if you're thinking and you're listening, you're like, oh, I don't have any trauma. But that's okay. I'm not of the belief that everybody has to have trauma. But sometimes we judge people very harshly because of their trauma response, right? So this person who is, you know, stingy, maybe another word that they might think about themselves as being frugal and making sure that they have stuff because they've learned that everybody's going to take from them. So I need to just make sure that I'm going to be able to survive at a basic level. That might be what's going on with them. But we don't see all that. All we see is, I grew up in this environment. I've been comfortable enough to share. I've been comfortable enough to open myself up to people. I don't understand why you don't do it. Something's wrong with you. We victimize and make this, not victimize, but villainize and make this person out to be an evil person when really they're just having lots of reactions. Now, that doesn't mean you can't hold people accountable. I don't even know if I like holding people accountable. You can't help people change their behaviors. You can, but recognizing that there's probably some explanation for that. Now, that also doesn't mean you should go out, oh, I was listening to Dr. Hinton, Dr. Chapman, and now I know what your problem is. You got trauma. And that doesn't help either.
You know that's what's going to happen after. Yeah. That's hard, especially when whatever someone is doing feels hurtful or harmful to you.
Yeah.
It takes a different level of consciousness and compassion and grace that someone is hurting you, but for you to understand, we throw this term around that hurt people, but there is some truth into that.
Yeah.
That once I started to ingrain myself with the belief that we are all always trying to protect ourselves in some way with our behaviors. And a lot of what's happening is we're just choosing all the wrong ways and all the wrong things and doing all the wrong things to protect ourselves.
Right.
Then I think that helped me view myself and things that I needed to heal from and things that I'm still working on. And it helped me view other people in a very different way. And I choose now
to try as best as I can, I choose compassion over blame. Mm-hmm. In every turn, in every opportunity that I can. You know, I want to believe that for, don't get me wrong, and somebody out there is like, Hitler. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't people on the fringes that have issues, but, you know, for the most part, I think that we're all things being equal. You know, I just think that people are good people. We just have issues that we don't know how to deal with, you know, and a lot of what we'll talk about a little bit later is a part of what happens is something traumatic happens to you, or it happens to us, and what we do is we adapt. We make, like you said, we make some sort of adaptation to survive. And then what happens is what behaviorism teaches us, typically, once we develop a coping skill that works, we continue to use it until it doesn't work anymore. I think that that is a part of the foundation of how domestic violence escalates in some situations. I yelled at you. I can hover and yell at you, and then one day you try to get away. Oh, it doesn't work anymore, so I grab your arm. Now and it stopped you, so now this works. So now every time I grab your arm. And then you try to wiggle away one day, and then, oh, it's not working, so I grab both arms. And then now I'm grabbing both arms. And then you try to wiggle away, and I twist both arms. Like, skills until they don't work anymore. And then when they don't work anymore, we try something new or something different. My point is that whatever we, like you said, whatever we developed to help us when we were 8 through a trauma, you know, there's this 8-year-old little boy, little girl inside of you that says this works. It's worked for us. And every time I get scared or afraid, that 8-year-old comes out and says, I got it, because this works. And every time you experience an event that's similar, that's close to that original event, or you think that something similar to that may happen, that part of you steps up and says, remember, I know what'll work. And what happens is, you know, it's you trying to reuse this tool that maybe was useful for you at 8, but it's not useful for you at 28.
Yeah, and I think that's what I would add, and this is a modify or an addition there, is when that little 8-year-old comes out, it's probably unconscious. I don't think people are fully aware that they're going into this old coping mechanism. And it probably, there's many times when the coping mechanism is no longer useful or helpful, but you use it because it still somehow reduces anxiety that you have. It's not actually getting you a result, and it's counterproductive. Let's just say one of them is pushing people away, because, you know, in a social society, we do need people. So you're probably still having the effects of the part of you that wants to be around people, but then the other part that says, oh, this is how we stay safe. So we got to continue to do that.
Yeah. Good point. That's probably a good place to put a pin in it. We discussed this. We got a lot of more for those who are listening. We appreciate you supporting and listening. We got a lot of more. This is going to probably be a series. Who knows? A 2-3-part series. Who knows? We'll talk about it until exhausted. But a part of what we want to, again, is we want to, again, continue to flesh out the idea of what is trauma, different ways with which it manifests, how it manifests emotionally, mentally, and physically. Is a good point that Dr. Chapman made, how trauma sits in your body. And do you really have irritable bowel syndrome? Do you really have stomach issues? Why are you having continuous headaches? You know, it's not to say that there isn't something physiological there, but is it tied to some sort of anxiety, some sort of stress, some sort of unresolved trauma in your life that, because it wasn't dealt with, it may have manifested itself physically? So I'm pretty sure at some point we'll tap into intergenerational trauma, the idea of how trauma can be passed down from parents to children, from generation to generation to generation to generation. And I know that probably will bleed us and lead us into some cultural stuff as well, which we always like to get into cultural stuff. But the idea of intergenerational trauma, how is it that ways of coping you know, how, you know, ways of behaving and ways of coping are passed down. Real quick story before we go. I would do some guest lectures for a professor in the Department of Counseling. Her name was Tori Wulcher. Shout out Tori Wulcher. She was one of those people who gave me any opportunity to talk before I started doing multicultural competency therapy. She gave me a lot of help and a lot of practice in speaking to her classes and coming to her seminars and stuff. And she talked about storing food and how she would, she was very vocal about like storing, she would store food. And how that is connected to why she has never experienced the Holocaust. Can that trauma be passed down from generation where the kids are now doing things and they don't know why they do them? She's storing, you know what I mean? Like, she has this habit of storing food and don't even know why. Like, so I'm saying, if we don't deal with our traumas, do our kids see our behaviors, how we interact with other people, and they then adapt those things, and that becomes their norm? But they don't know that a lot of these behaviors is stemmed from some sort of trauma. So I think it's something interesting for us to explore this intergenerational piece, this cultural piece with Black families, Jewish families maybe, other family, you know, other families of color out there. I think that would be interesting to explore that. Like, there are a lot of different places and spaces that we can go to, and especially any time that, you know, we always tread lightly when we talk about culture, particularly other people's cultures, you know. So if you have any ideas or suggestions or perspectives on that, please contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. any perspectives you'd like us to share, because that's something that we'll talk about, is this idea of intergenerational trauma and how trauma can be passed down from generation to generation and through cultures and stuff like that. But again, we up on time. As we always say, we like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for giving us a platform to talk about mental health issues. There's just not enough conversations like this. There just aren't. As we always say, getting out of here, as I always say, you know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that the people that you know, the people that you love, make sure they know. And make sure whatever you're doing, you know, this life is short. Make sure you're doing something that sets your soul on fire and that you're passionate about. And I love you, peace, love you all, peace and blessings. And Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
All right, brothers and sisters, I hope that you found something useful for today's conversation. As I'm reflecting on a couple things, I think that might be a good takeaway, something for you to sit down and digest. I think there might be some questions that you might want to ask yourself. I think, you know, people often ask me, do I think that everybody has a disorder? Do I think that everybody has trauma? And my answer is usually, no, I don't think that everybody has a disorder. And no, I don't necessarily think everybody has trauma. But we're all shaped by the experiences that we encounter. And some of us, those experiences have a stronger impact on who we are and what we do. So it might be worthwhile to ask yourself, why do I do some of the things I do? Is there anything that I can think about that has had a psychological or physiological imprint on me? And if you can't think about that, then just think about some of the things that are symptoms of a psychological or physiological imprint. You find yourself being anxious around certain situations. Do you find yourself having difficulty breathing, feeling like you got tightness in your chest, starting to get symptomatic pains in your back and in your head around certain things? Just taking time to be aware. There might be some things that got imprinted subconsciously or in your automatic conscious that register in your body but don't register in your mind. If you took some time to recall, you might be able to make that connection. And making that connection, as Freud would say, and I know people are not fans of Freud, if you can become aware, bring things to the awareness, that might help you resolve some things that are going on. That doesn't mean it'll be an easy road for you. But it's definitely probably going to be a road worth traveling down. Maybe it might involve you having to break down the glass house of where you thought your life was and to recognize where your life actually is at. But maybe that's an opportunity for you to build a new house. And yeah, that's not even about that house being stronger or weaker. It's just an evolved house, a house that registers all the things you've experienced in the past and can now use all the information you have to make you a better you. All right, peace and blessings. We'll talk to you next time. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
From the center of the Thundering Herd.